Buy now and make no payments until fall. That's right. At Jeff Weiler's Columbus Auto Mall, drive today with no down payment and no payments for 120 days. Whether it's a car, truck, or SUV, why wait? Shop hundreds of vehicles, all with no payments till fall. Hurry into the Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall, where the deals won't wait and neither should you. Find us on Gender Road or jeffweilercolumbusautomall.com.
I'm Molly Wansell.
And I'm Jeffrey Wansell.
And for the last 16 years or thereabouts, we have been having lunch every Saturday, and often our conversation turns to murder.
And that's what's prompted us to launch this true crime podcast called Blood Ties.
Hi everyone, welcome back to the Blood Ties podcast. I'm Molly Wansell and I'm here with my father, Jeffrey Wansell.
Hello everyone, welcome back. Thank you for listening. It's been an interesting week or two. True crime is a story that keeps on giving.
People just don't stop killing, do they?
No, it never stops. And the appetite for it becomes just exponential. The fascination with what drives people to commit the worst crime imaginable to man or woman is never ending. And it constantly, I mean, partly, I suppose, the reason that Molly and I started this podcast, all those now years ago, was that we used to talk about it at lunch on Saturdays. And it was a topic that never didn't
interest. There's always something.
It's always something.
Always something. But yeah, I don't think we knew. I mean, obviously, we were a bit late to the podcast, the true crime podcast, to be fair.
Oh, we were, yes.
And here we are.
And here we are. And we're going to do CrimeCon UK in September.
We're going to CrimeCon UK. I mean, I only have to do one thing. I have to sit on podcast row, I think. And we maybe will record a live podcast there.
I think we're going to record one.
But Jeffrey has to do about a million things.
Well, I thought they sent us a very interesting questionnaire, which we both filled in.
Oh, that was to be put on someone else's page to promote us, I think.
Was it? Well, whatever it was. It pointed out, we pointed out to those who sent us the questions, that we were the only father and daughter team doing this sort of thing.
Yeah. Alistair Campbell and Grace Campbell did a podcast briefly. Not about true crime. But I don't think there are any other father-daughter duos.
There probably are.
I can't know if there are in the true crime space.
There might be. I'm fascinated to hear.
Let us know if there are. We'll reach out to them.
We will, absolutely.
For sure. That would be...
And I think one of the things that the little questionnaire prompted me to say is what makes this particularly interesting for me anyway, is that I try and make the crimes accessible, and yet you have two different points of view, two views of them, mine and Molly's, and those are not always the same. They don't always coincide by any means, and I think it adds a dimension that isn't there if I were just simply on my own rambling on about some horrible events. I don't think it would have the same resonance at all. It simply wouldn't work. The days of Edgar Lustgarten.
I don't know, Dad. The people are the big fan of your voice.
Oh, well, that's very
sweet. So I think probably it would, but I see what you mean.
Yeah, I think it just adds much more dimension.
I mean, that guy who does the Case File podcast is like hugely successful, and he just reads everything in a really monotone voice and doesn't talk about anything.
Well, all we need is a bit more publicity. That's what I think.
We're doing our best.
This week's podcast, it came to me about another of those extraordinary serendipities. I get an email out of the blue from a writer, a lady writer, saying, I wonder if you can help me. Here is the link to a piece you wrote in the Daily Mail in 2009 about a case called the Beauty in the Bath. I could not remember ever having written it. It's got my byline on it. I know that.
But I'm sure you did write it.
I'm sure I do, because
everything.
It has certain of my characteristics.
Turns of phrase.
Yeah, in it. So I know I wrote it. But it reminded me, going back to this story, I thought, crikey, it would make the most wonderful podcast because it's a mystery.
Oh, I love a mystery.
Yeah. And that's why I thought immediately thought, well, isn't that a wonderful thing to have suddenly...
Been reminded of. What did the lady writer want?
She's trying to write a piece about the beauty in the bath for Esquire magazine.
Ooh.
And she actually happens to live in the village where the murder took place.
Exciting.
And she's been fascinated since childhood.
Oh, I'm excited. Well, let's do it then. Is it called The Beauty in the Bath?
It is.
Well, let's do The Beauty in the Bath.
Beauty in the Bath. It's a most wonderful story. It's a damp autumn evening, a Saturday evening of October the 8th, 1983. A beautician, Cynthia Bolshaw, who's aged 50, has come home to her bungalow in Heswall, which is in Cheshire, not very far from Liverpool, where she's been at work. She worked at that point behind the Christian Dior counter at the department store, Brown's department store, which then became Debenhams, and I don't know what's going to become now. She was a strikingly handsome woman, a divorcee. Her husband was a pilot, had been a pilot, and they had a son called Christopher. She lived in this bungalow in Buff's Lane. I love that, Buff's Lane. It's an extra dimension to this story. That particular evening, Saturday, October the 8th, 1983, she was expecting one, and I emphasise the phrase one, of her lovers, a man called John Taft. Then in his early 30s, she'd first met him when a few months earlier when he'd come round because he worked for a glazing firm, a double glazing firm.
Jeffrey's looking up underneath his eyebrows.
Yes, well, it's one of those. Anyway, he was married to a woman called Barbara, who happened to be a mature student at Sussex University in Brighton. She went home every other weekend, but this weekend she was away. Okay, so Cynthia, the Court of Appeal's description, this is, not mine.
Right.
Had an active sex life with a large number of men.
Good on her.
Okay. It's estimated she had 200 lovers, including an inspector of the Ugandan police, an oil rig worker, a magician and a fraud squad officer. She kept details of all these lovers in her diaries. She would often see more than one a day.
You go, Cynthia.
Well, there was no doubt that that particular evening, Taft and Cynthia Bolshaw made love, naked on the covers of the bed in the bungalow. Taft said later, I left at about 10:30 and got home. He lived about 5 miles away, about 10:45. And when I left Cynthia, she was alive and well. Apparently, she put on a black negligee. This is 1980s, so that people use the word negligee rather more than they would do now, when he left to drive home. At 10:30 the following morning, the Sunday, Cynthia was found face down and naked in a bath of tepid water by her sister and her brother-in-law. There was no sign of a break-in. The back door was open, and so was the ground floor bedroom window. It was a bungalow, remember.
Mm-hmm. Bungalow is a universal term, isn't it?
Yes, well, it's a one-floor
house,
one-story house. Her car was missing. It was a red Toyota, which it's a little driveway. Again, if you look at the piece, you can see a picture of the driveway. So you drive up. It's quite a respectable road.
Like Granny and Grandpa's bungalow.
Yeah, not unlike it at all. nice little drive up, easy, nice place to park, all of the above. Now, Taft insisted that the car was still there when he left. It was found abandoned on Chester High Road at about 7:30 in the morning that her body was discovered. Now, Chester High Road's quite a considerable way away.
So it was found at 7:30 and she was found at 10:30?
There or thereabouts.
Okay.
Okay. The pathologist who examined Cynthia's body said that she'd been strangled and put in the bath, not drowned. He also said the time of death was after midnight and probably between 3 and 6 a.m. This finding was confirmed by a later post-mortem. But sadly, the findings disappeared at some point in the next 10 years. Never mind. On October the 11th, 3 days after the killing, gets even more wonderfully convoluted mystery, a stocking containing some of Cynthia's jewellery was found in a phone box near Manchester, about 50 miles from the bungalow. Now, the stocking wasn't Cynthia's, but it did contain fibres from her bed. Okay, it was obviously a stocking mask. So why would he dump the jewellery? Okay, so was this a robbery that went wrong, or was it a murder dressed up to look like a robbery?
But then why would you leave the jewels in a phone box? You'd just keep hold of them, wouldn't you, or get rid of them a bit more carefully?
Well, you'd probably fence them, but you'd need to know where you could fence them, wouldn't you?
Oh, I love it. What does fence mean?
Oh, fence means giving them to someone who sells them for you. There are lots of people in British crime known as fences.
Oh, you fence them.
They buy.
I've never heard that before.
They buy stolen goods.
Would she have very valuable jewellery?
Yeah, she was quite well off. But if you're going to steal the jewellery, why leave her wearing a necklace and earrings in the bath?
Also, why take your stocking mask off and put the jewellery in it? And also, why were you rubbing your face on the bed if you put your stocking mask on?
It's a very interesting mystery.
Mm.
Okay, so the police interview hundreds of people. They have a couple of quite serious suspects, persons of interest, but no arrests. Taft himself is interviewed, who insists, first of all, that he never heard of her and never met her, then that he might have met her when he talked to her about double glazing.
Taft, come on, be sensible. Your DNA's going to be up. Also, won't she have written about him in the diaries?
Yes, but they interviewed all the other people in the diaries.
Not all 200.
I think they interviewed almost all of them.
But also, she could have been sleeping with these people over a very long time. It makes it sound like she was sleeping with 200 men simultaneously, which obviously
no,
not the case.
I'm not suggesting that, Molly. I'm not at all. There were a couple, as I say, there were a couple of serious subjects, but dead end. 16 years pass. Okay.
Yeah.
By this point, Taft and his then wife, first wife Barbara, have divorced what's described as amicably. And indeed, at one point, they even stayed in the same house and shared a bank account. But that was in 1987. But in 1999, Barbara went to the police and told them that she had a story to tell. She said that John had told her the weekend afterwards, when she got back from Brighton, the course at Sussex University, that he was terrified of being framed for Cynthia's murder, and that he thought that he was the last person to see Cynthia alive. He also said he'd buried the clothes he'd been wearing that night in the garden after he got back from Cynthia's, because he was so worried.
But you wouldn't have known that she'd been murdered by then.
No. Leave it with me. The answer comes.
Okay.
But most telling of all, Taft had asked Barbara, and this is what Barbara told the police, that he'd asked her if she'd give him a false alibi if she were ever interviewed by the police. Okay? So you have your first wife telling the police. The police then, because DNA has come on quite a lot since 1983, we're now 1999, they look at the semen on the black negligee, and of course, it's John Taft's. So his story about him not knowing her, or may have only met her once, falls apart. So from nowhere to everywhere, the police suddenly have not only a prime suspect, but someone they're prepared to charge. Okay? And guess who is going to be the chief witness for the prosecution?
Barbara.
Precisely.
I just don't think that you have an affair with someone and then get your wife to tell the dig.
Well, let's get back to the digging in the garden for a moment.
Okay.
A neighbour, a Mrs. Evans, says she saw Taft digging in the garden at 11:30 at night. Taft says he was merely putting out bird food. Mrs. Evans is no longer with us, so we can't ask Mrs. Evans what she actually saw. But nevertheless, she too saw Taft in the garden. Nobody could explain. There was a photo fit of a man seen beside Cynthia's red Toyota in Chester High Road, which didn't look a bit like
Taft.
It was also pointed out, although I don't think very fluently, that it would have been very difficult indeed for Taft to have driven the Toyota to Chester High Road and then gone all the way back to his own house. It would have probably taken him 6 or 7 hours to walk. Okay. The judge suggested in the summing up at Liverpool Crown Court in November 1999 that Taft could have gone back to Bolshaw and killed her and then suggested it was a robbery. Why would he wear a stocking mask if he's making love to...
He didn't necessarily wear a stocking mask.
No. Okay. In spite of the fact that the photo fit seen near her car doesn't look a bit like Taft, the jury are unsure. They can't reach a majority verdict. Yes, they can. We can't all agree. All right, the judge instructs quite rightly, can you reach a majority of 10 to 2? No, we can't reach that. So the judge is on the brink of ordering a retrial when all of a sudden the foreman of the jury sends a note saying, it's okay, we've now reached a majority verdict. One person has clearly changed sides. John Taft was found guilty and was given a life term. He was seen by the police and by some in the jury, and indeed some people in the local village, as an arrogant, calculating, manipulative man with a streak of violence in him. But one of the great ironies, the horrors of this case, is that Taft had only just got married again to his wife, second wife, Susan. I think they'd been married 19 days when he was arrested for the murder of Cynthia Bolshaw. Immediately after his sentence, Susan launched a campaign to have the verdict overturned. She made the point that he couldn't have dumped the Toyota at that distance. That why would he wear a stocking mask? And what about the unidentified fingerprints on the windowsill? There was at least one unidentified fingerprint on the windowsill. Susan's position was that Taft had indeed gone home and that then probably another lover, had arrived and perhaps had decided to kill Cynthia out of jealousy. The Court of Appeal were not convinced. The appeals failed, And Taft remained in prison until 2011, spending 12 years in jail. Throughout, Susan Taft, his second wife, was utterly convinced that he was
innocent,
a victim of a miscarriage of justice. Taft was released, and the two of them have disappeared out of sight. Whether they've changed their name, whether they've left the area. At one point, I think she was identified as living in Birkenhead, in Liverpool. But they've gone. The first wife, Barbara, is still with us, as indeed is her son, Christopher. But if you like extraordinary coincidences, Cynthia Bolshaw's first ex-husband was a pilot.
Mm.
He's flying his plane alone across Liverpool Bay when it suddenly plunges into the river and he's killed outright.
Gosh.
You couldn't make this drama up.
What happened to Cynthia and his son?
Christopher is working, not in that area. So there is...
So where are we now?
Where?
Well, we think... They think case closed. It was definitely...
Taft.
Buy now and make no payments until fall. That's right. At Jeff Weiler's Columbus Auto Mall, drive today with no down payment and no payments for 120 days. Whether it's a car, truck, or SUV, why wait? Shop hundreds of vehicles, all with no payments till fall. Hurry into the Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall, where the deals won't wait, and neither should you. Find us on Gender Road or jeffweilercolumbusautomall.com.
But I can see by your face you're not so sure.
I'm far from sure.
And I assume that's why you wrote your article.
I'm far from sure.
And I'm sure that's why your lady writer's keen to know.
Yeah. I mean, I did talk to her. She, as I say, she still lives there. Almost all the local community are convinced he was guilty. But not quite all.
Oh, really?
Because he wasn't at all popular. He was a very arrogant man. And I think they also thought, as so often these cases we've talked about before, people think that police don't make mistakes and the justice system always works.
I think he seems guilty because why would you bury the clothes?
He didn't. They dug the garden up. There were no clothes in the garden.
There are no clothes in the garden?
None. It was a myth.
Why would he say that? Or did Barbara make it up?
Well, I couldn't possibly
Mrs.
say.
Or Mrs. Evans.
Mm.
But he maybe was putting out bird feed. She just thought that he was burying clothes because Barbara said.
Mm. No, they dug up the garden and didn't find any clothes.
No clothes. So weird.
It's a tantalising story. In my heart, I have the feeling that it was a miscarriage.
I can see that, you know, I don't know what Taft and Cynthia were into, but you know, being strangled by mistake is not an impossibility during a sexual encounter.
No, indeed, there are some women I'm told who actually think it's a good part of the sexual encounter.
And men, because there's, what about that guy who used to present that TV show Under the Hammer or something? It was like a TV show about houses, and he died with it doing self-asphyxiation.
Yes, well, lots of those. Spy in the bag.
Spy in the bag. This guy was like hanging out of a wardrobe giving himself, you know.
Yeah, there was an MP who did that as well.
Yeah.
But
can go horribly wrong.
Yeah. But yes, it's possible she was strangled during the act of sex, but I don't know. I just think this is a very, very good mystery. Why does Barbara take 12 years to go to the police? I think I can answer that one. Because she was furious.
So he got married, engaged to someone else.
Then he got married again.
Yeah. I mean, that's not unusual. I mean, could well have been Barbara's stocking.
Who can tell?
Fascinating. I had no idea about that.
Beauty in the bath.
Beauty in the bath. Well, let us know what you think, listeners.
Yes, please.
Or do you know anything more about it? Can you flesh it out, as they say?
Yes.
Flesh it out.
But as I say, the local knowledge...
It's so funny, isn't it? Like you were saying, well, you know, and how long it took to catch that guy last we talked about last week. But yeah, I never really think about the fact that in a story like that, when it happens, the further away it gets from the time it happened, the less likely it is you're ever going to know.
Mm. I don't think the police would have re-examined this unless Barbara had come to them.
Interesting. Well,
it's a woman scorned.
Potentially. Maybe it was all Barbara.
That hadn't occurred to me.
No?
No.
Why not?
Because she was in Brighton.
Apparently she was in Brighton. She's got a car. Long drive, I grant you. But anything can happen.
Mm.
Well, there you go.
Well, I actually think in terms of... this one makes such a nice change from the kind of relentlessness of one or two of the other cases.
Yeah.
It's a wonderful change of pace.
The previous two were pretty miserable.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I think... And I like it too because... I have been sort of involved in it from an early stage, and as I say, I think I wrote.
Not that you remember.
Not that I remembered. No, 2009. But yeah, it is. When I went back and read it, I thought, "Wow, this is actually fascinating."
2009. You wrote that in 2009.
Yeah. I think we must have got an interview with the wife, because at that point he was still in jail.
Susan.
Because she insisted. I think it was done by a colleague. The interview was done by a colleague, a lady colleague, because she insisted she used to cry herself to sleep every night. And she was still deeply in love with him. And used to love going to see him in prison.
Yeah, of course. Like, you know, when you meet someone and fall in love with them, if then someone's like, oh, you know, you're not going to be like, you just think that person's great. You're like, there's no way they can be a murderer.
Hmm.
She hadn't been with him that long either, so...
No, I think they'd known each other for a year or two before they actually got married.
Engaged or married.
But never mind. Anyway, they have put it behind them and disappeared.
Well, wherever they are, I hope they're very happy.
Me too.
But, well, there we go.
Well, what have we got in front of us this coming week, Mo?
More of the same.
You're not back at the office yet?
No.
No.
But, I mean, we'll be, by the time this comes out, we'll be 1 week into London or the UK being open, more open.
More open, yeah.
But we still don't know about our beloved Joe Allen.
We don't know about our beloved Joe Allen, which is where we used to have lunch every Saturday.
Yeah.
But we're keeping our fingers crossed.
We're really hopeful.
We are. We're very hopeful.
That it will open soon.
Because it's part of our life.
In fact, our friend Debbie, who goes to Joe Allen, or used to go to Joe Allen on the Saturday lunchtime, she was one of the people that texted me last week to say, I've just come out of the shower and your dad's on TV.
There are some funny things happened, don't they?
It was not funny as the receptionist. Well, she's no longer working with us, sadly. But my receptionist at my work, who's left now, she used to watch Jeffrey's programs or World's Most Evil Killers or whatever when she was getting ready in the morning, like putting her makeup on and things. That was like her big treat because her partner didn't like to watch them so much. So while she would watch on repeat Jeffrey talking about murder while she was getting ready for work.
Well. I think I'm touched.
She was probably fangirling more over you than the famous actors that come into our office when you came in.
Well, Mo, it's a funny old world, this.
Mm.
But, anyway, I hope you enjoyed that story. I did. I was nice to go back to it. And as I said at the beginning, I didn't remember it. But now, of course, I do. And I went back and looked at the Liverpool Echo about it at the time. Very, very good pieces in the Liverpool Echo.
I missed that. So where was her bungalow again?
It's in Cheshire.
In Cheshire, okay. Yeah. Oh, yeah, that's not far from...
Not far from Liverpool.
Liverpool.
Hmm. It was a big deal at Liverpool.
Yeah, I can imagine. Well, thank you very much. Thank you to all the people that help us, to our producer Sam Bray and my brother Dan, who did the music, my friend George, who drew our caricature, to Audio Boom for hosting us, to Jeffrey for doing the hard work this year and back in 2009, and to you, the listeners. What would we do without you?
Thank you all for listening, and I do appreciate it. As I say often, it's a privilege to talk to you, and unfortunately bad things can happen to good people, so do please be careful out there.
Buy now and make no payments until fall. That's right. At Jeff Weiler's Columbus Auto Mall, drive today with no down payment and no payments for 120 days. Whether it's a car, truck, or SUV, why wait? Shop hundreds of vehicles, all with no payments till fall. Hurry into the Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall, where the deals won't wait, and neither should you. Find us on Gender Road or JeffWeilerColumbusAutoMall.com.
You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job post seen on other job sites. With Indeed sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Don't wait any longer. Speed up your hiring right now with Indeed. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/kidsandfamily. Just go to Indeed.com/kidsandfamily right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.